when you read the Gospels, you find that there are many fragments missing. And oftentimes you're at the mercy of a translator, at changes in language and in the meanings of language, so that finally we reach a point where certain things in the Gospels are open to different interpretations, and disputes can arise, and religions can be formed because we interpret it this way and he interprets it that way and someone else interprets it a third way. And throughout the centuries, whenever politics gets into religion and the state and religion become one and the same, you find a prevailing sense of rightness that wants to protect its own status. And if the Bible is in the way, it simply alters the Bible to suit itself. Either the words out of the text or just changes the meanings of the words. So that you find for many centuries there was no such thing as reading a Bible. You went to whoever was the presiding clergyman and he told you what it meant. He didn't even bother to give you a Bible. He gave you his interpretation. And usually it meant that you lived in fear of God. A very strange thing happens with the revelation of St. John. It isn't in the usual language of the day. There's really no point in altering the words of the revelation of St. John because nobody understands it anyway. And so you'll find that of all of the New Testament, the one which you can depend on to have come down through the years unaltered, in its original form, as closely as is humanly possible, is the revelation. It was so far beyond the belief even of the clergy that they saw nothing in it that challenged them. And as a result, we fortunately have a document which brings us the pure truth of the Father, not subject to human will, to human discretion, to human politics, to human ignorance. It is as it was. And it reveals seven steps that take us from man of earth to son of God. But it does more than reveal the seven steps that take us to Son of God. Those same seven steps are seven veils lifted up to reveal that the one who started out on the seven steps was the Son of God at the beginning of the journey. Now you see, you can take the four Gospels and deny that Jesus was teaching the divinity of man. You can do as religion has done. You can teach that there is a mortal man out here and that he, through worshiping God on God's terms, will ultimately be received in a place called heaven and there given his divinity as a reward for having lived a good, moral, human, mortal life. You can do that with the four Gospels and get away with it. It isn't true, but you can get away with it, and religion has. But when you come to the revelation of St. John, you discover that you no longer can get away with it. The revelation is that there is no mortal man. There never was. You can never be a mortal being. You can live under the belief that you are. Now, if we were discussing the four Gospels, or the epistles, we might not seek to stand at the highest possible level of being at first. But now, you see, we're in the Supreme Court. And after the Supreme Court, there's no place else to go. So we must face the hard truth now. The truth is that Jesus discovered something that no religion in the world is willing to teach, let alone to believe. And that is that you are divine now. It shouldn't be difficult to accept, considering the fact that we are to call no man our father except God. And so we proceed then with the understanding that divinity is your name. You can go deeper and say, therefore I am the Christ, but we let that go for a moment. Divinity is your name. And the seven steps to illumination are the ways in which you reach the point where you can accept divinity as your name and demonstrate it. In each of the seven steps, you are released from another veil of hypnotism which currently blocks your acceptance of your own identity, so that you can stand revealed as I am. You might see it this way. Pretend for a moment that your name is Pilate, and before you stands a man who describes himself as one who has come to bear witness to the truth. To you, he's a thorn in the side. You have no personal animosities toward him, but he's making your life difficult. And he says to you a strange thing. Pilate, he says, and he looks right at you, you, the representative of the entire Roman Empire, and he says, Pilate, thou couldst have no power over me. Now let's bring that translation up to date, to the 21st century, if you will. Let him say to Pilate what he was really saying, without a veil. And it would go something like this, Pilate, you think you're looking at a person, but you're not. You're looking at the divine self. You think you're looking at a physical man, but you're not. You're looking at the light of God. I am the light of God, the Christ standing before you, Pilate. I am not in a mortal form. I am not in a physical form. I am not in a physical structure. I am not in matter, but to your vision I appear to be. And all you can do is crucify your concept of me. You will think you have put me on a cross. You will think you have made me suffer. You will think you will then bury me in a tomb, but you will not, because there is no me here in the nature of your vision of me. All that is standing before you is the invisible Son of God, seen through the glass darkly of your human vision. You are making an image of me, which you call Jesus. You are doing it with your sense perception. And I tell you, that image you are making of me is not standing in front of you, it is in your mind. You are looking at your thought and calling it Jesus. But your thought, with the physical image that you are conceiving of me, is only in your mind, not external to you. That would bring it up to date, because that's what he was saying when he said, Pilate, thou couldst have no power over me. Now what he was saying to Pilate, in modern language, is what we are to learn to say to this world. You are looking at the divine Son of the Father. You are seeing a mortal physical image, but both of them can't be there. One is. And there I make or break my demonstration of reality. I am either that divine invisible Son standing here before you, or I am the mortal image that you see and believe is here. Oftentimes you've heard Joel say, nobody has ever seen me, Oh, they've seen Joel. They've seen the form. And often you've heard him say, nobody's ever seen you. They've seen your form, but they've never seen you. And then you have heard him say, if you can see it, taste it, touch it, smell it, feel it, hear it, it isn't. And we've all said, yes, that's wonderful. That's a beautiful mystical thought. I accept that. I even wish I understood it. Now we're going to accept it and accept the consequence of accepting it. Namely, that what you see not only isn't there, what you touch isn't there, what you feel, hear, smell, taste isn't there, it isn't anywhere. It is your concept. And it just happens that your concept and everyone else's concept looks exactly the same. Now then, the seven steps to illumination are to break the hypnosis of our concepts. The concepts that's binding us within our own thought patterns. Now just quickly, review to yourself that God being all, there must be divinity standing where you are. Nobody sees that divinity, not even you. But if divinity is not where you are, then certainly God is not all. Now this is the major hypnosis that has confronted the human race. The unawareness of divinity where I stand. And from that springs a new concept of identity, which has nothing to do with the divine image and likeness of God. That new concept is a human image. It is the imitation of your divine image. And in that human image, that imitation image, you live and you die. And you have good things, and you have bad things. You live in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. When John was in high illumination, freed from the personal ego, able to perceive through the soul, he received a message that did not happen 2,000 years ago. The letter to the first church in this prologue, is happening right now in a conversation between God the Father and God the Father within you. That is a permanent dispensation. If you were in the consciousness of John, you would tune into it right now and you would hear it as John did. It is a now message. Now the Father is speaking to the first church in your consciousness. Now the Father is speaking to the Christ in you. And John, through his capacity to live in the perception of the soul, was able to tune in on this conversation between the infinite Father and the individual Father. So that, as it were, he was like the FBI, you might say, wiretapping. Only his wiretapping was in the infinite. And because of it, he could bring us these seven steps. Each step is the guidance which your soul receives from the Infinite Father. as Christ in you is unveiled as your present identity. We're moving toward the realization of our present identity. Not the attainment of that identity, but the realization that it is so. Spread the good news, the gospel. And what was that good news? Go forth and raise the dead. Those who are dead to their divinity. Those who are unaware that where they stand, the Spirit of God alone stands. Heal the sick. Those who are sick because they are unaware that in divinity there is no sickness. Feed the hungry. Those who seek the ultimate truth and do not know that they are already the ultimate truth. The good news is that divinity is the name of man. Not human, divinity. And the veil that separates us from that realization is the entire purpose of all that will be revealed to us in every word, thought, and deed that comes through John's inner perception. Now are we the sons of God, and we must elevate ourselves in our capacities of perception in order to attain that realization. While you're crossing on the bridge of faith, you are also developing capacities to lift you above your thought. Now you can see quickly how far away you are from divine thought. Ask yourself if you have a will. There's hardly one of us who doesn't have a will of our own. We're not putty. We definitely have a will. We definitely have an ego. In some, the will is strong, in some, it's weak. But it's there. In some, the ego is strong, in others, it's weak. But it's there. In fact, our entire consciousness of self is built around this false ego, this me ego. Here I am. I'm in this world. And now I've got to figure out how to survive and how to succeed, how to be happy. That's part of the veil. Divinity does not struggle, does not strive, does not seek, does not want. And as long as you find yourself struggling, striving, seeking, wanting, needing, these are the signals that you should heed, which are saying you are not in the awareness of your divinity. You are denying your divinity. And because these signals of lack and limitation and illness and frustration and fear are coming to you, they are bringing you an awareness that you are separated from something to which you should not be a part. That something is your own divinity. The very nature of your being lacking in your consciousness, you wander off, straying into a second consciousness, a false sense of being. And now each veil must be lifted to enable you to sit still, to relax, to accept. There is no other life than divine life. There is no need for a will apart from God. There is no need for an ego apart from God. There is one spiritual ego. And that ego is the only ego under which I can live. There is one divine will. And that will is the will under which I must pursue every day. I must awaken to that will of the Father within me. I must find the tree of life. I must get back to that one source. You see, Christ begins in God. And man must begin in Christ. Unless you begin in Christ, you are not linked with God. And the form is not linked with the life. And form and life being separated, you wander off, and ultimately there must come a day of reckoning when the signals begin and karmic law begins to bring forth the balance to alert you to the fact that you are straying farther and farther from the Father's house, until if you do not heed the signals, they all accumulate into one grand and glorious signal. And this becomes a disaster. Now we're asked to look at the tree and to see that there is one mind governing that tree, not many. There may be 5,000 or 50,000 leaves, but there are not 50,000 minds. They're all governed by the one central intelligence of the tree. If you cannot do that with the Father, then you are like the little leaf on the tree who is not living in the intelligence of the tree and soon finds it has no sustenance whatsoever. If that little leaf on the tree were not in the one mind, it would be through. We who are unable to rest in the knowledge that the one mind is governing the life of itself everywhere have simply not accepted that we are that divine life. And so we're running afoul of the divine life, not letting the one intelligence live us. We are competing with the one will of God. And you might just as well be holding an electric current in your fingers as to be in another will competing with the one will. Your day of judgment is quick. The sword of truth cuts you off. The one will must be found in the Father within. The one mind is found in the Father within, and the one spiritual body is found in the Father within. Now, because you are divine, there is no individual in this room who does not have a spiritual body. There is no one here who can say, "I do not have a spiritual body," and be speaking the truth at the same time. God the Father says, "Be perfect as your Father." And there is no perfection in a human form. There is no continuity in a human form. There is no divine law in a human form. And there is no divine substance in a human form. If we have experienced a sequence of setbacks, it is only because we have accepted a human form and a human identity, a mortal life. And there is none. There never has been a mortal life. There never has been a human identity. There is the false sense of human identity. And because you are interested in divine law supporting you, You must learn to see that divine law can only support divine life. You must accept divine life as your life in order to be supported by divine law. Now, the hard truth is going to hurt. Because it is the straightest and most narrow way imaginable. The hard truth is that you must live by divine thought. And you are not capable of thinking divine thought. There is no human mind in this world that can think divine thought. Only the mind of God can think divine thought. And unless divine thought is governing your life, you are in a separate stream of human thought, and that is the separate life which does not know the perfection and harmony of the divine. You must surrender your thought to the divine. There must be a place where divine thought and your thought are one and the same. There must be a place where I take no thought, not even for my life, because divine thought is my thought. God is thinking through me. You see, that is the tree of life. Now you must analyze your thought to see why it is incapable of lifting you into the realm of reality. There'll be a million people dying around this world of cancer this year. There'll be many, many more other diseases claiming many lives. You and I, we see these things and we say to ourselves, why doesn't God? Does God see my loved one suffering? Does God see my friend, an amputee returning from Vietnam? Does God see the human blood that is being shed into this earth? Does God see the suffering and torture that goes on in hospitals? I see it. Why doesn't God? Medical world sees it. Why doesn't God? The psychiatric world sees it. Why doesn't God? Why does the human race see what God doesn't seem to see? Because we're seeing our thought. God isn't seeing it because there is no evil in divine thought. But John taught us that God is the only creator. That what God did not create, what God has not made, wasn't made. Did God make cancer? Did God make suffering? Did God make any disease that you know of? Then who made it? If God didn't make these things from which people suffer, who made these things? Thought made these things. All disease on this earth is human thought, and that's all it is. It doesn't matter if you see it every day, if you're knee-deep in it, even in your work, or if you or someone in your family is suffering from it. You're not suffering from anything God created, and there is no other creator. Now, if God didn't create cancer, or tuberculosis, or asthma, or anything else of that nature, and it wasn't created at all, does it exist? Or does it only appear to exist? Can that which God did not create exist at all? So this is the nature of the hypnosis that faces us. Because of our thought, we believe that which exists as cancer, tuberculosis, other diseases and disasters and catastrophes are existent even though they have no creator. And that hypnosis is the paradox which baffles us day by day. We suffer from that which has no existence in God, no source in God, no law from God to sustain it. And yet we suffer from it. And so take a letter, John, to the church at Ephesus. Because we must get to the bottom of this human hypnosis, we must lift the veil and unveil the Christ. Where the world is seeing disease, we must show there is no disease, there is only human thought. Where the world is suffering, where there is pain, where there are avalanches and volcanoes, where there are hurricanes and tidal waves, where there is sickness and despair, we must show this is not there. Christ is. And the false concept of disease and pain and suffering never exists outside of human thought. Let us teach those who dwell in the sense of mortality that they need not take dominion over bodies, over things, over people, that freedom is not in taking dominion over anyone or anything. Freedom is the unveiling of the hypnosis. It is the reversal of hypnosis. Freedom is the realization that the things which take place in my mind, in my human mind, are not happening except in my human mind. You say that's a hard teaching. Yes, it is the hardest teaching there is, that whatever is happening in your mind is not happening anywhere else except in your mind. And that your dominion lies only in taking dominion over your mind. Your mind has got to see sickness, has got to know sickness, has got to accept sickness as a reality, because it has no way of seeing God. Your mind has no way of experiencing God itself. The best your mind can do is form a concept of God. And the concepts that you form are not under the law of the Father. God does not govern your human concepts. God does not enter into your human concepts. God enters only into divine activity. And the veil is our mind believing that its thought is reality. Now look again at this Christ who stands before you. Go back into your awareness that you are Pilate. And look at him and say to yourself, what do I see there except my own thought? Is there a person in this world that really stands before me, or is it my own thought about what I am calling a person? If Christ is standing there, where is the person? If Spirit is before you, where is the material form you see? Is it out there, or is it in your thought? Is it possible that you have been looking at a spiritual universe, forming material ideas that exist only in your thought? The Father says yes. Because your thoughts are not my thoughts, and only my thoughts are reality. Only divine thought is real. Human thought is an imitation about divine thought. Where divine thought stands, that divine thought says, thou couldst have no power over me. Where mortal thought stands, you can have all the power you want over that mortal thought. But wherever divine thought is realized, where divinity is accepted in consciousness, a strange thing happens. You remember the story Joel told about his friend in Germany, high up in the finance division of Hitler's little group. And one day Hitler was told that this man was a Jew lover. He called him aside. He said, I understand you are associating with Jews. It isn't very good for us. Now he says, I want you to kill. I want you to help me in my plans to kill and exterminate those who are in our way. And as impossible as it would be normally to say no to Hitler, this man, according to Joel, said, well, you can do all that you want to, but you can't get me to kill for you. He was saying to Pilate, thou hast no power over me. And strangely, the man wasn't killed. Instead, he was given a pension. He was told to go to another country until the war was over, and they would send him his $20,000 every year. Why didn't they kill him? That wasn't at all like Mr. Hitler. And the reason was, he knew who he was. And he knew who Hitler was. And this will shock you. He knew that Hitler was only a concept. He knew that whatever human thought is, exists only where human thought is and not outside of it. He knew that he was looking at his own thought, and its name was Hitler. And there were 3 billion others doing the same but not knowing it. You'll discover someday you're going to be put to an easier test than that one, to discover that what is out there is only in your thought. But this man proved it, as Jesus did before Pilate. And there was another who proved it. In the Inquisition of the 15th century in Spain, all you had to do was think differently than the administration and you were dead. And there was another Hebrew named Maimonides. How did he walk the streets free? How did he even write books about truth? He knew his divine identity. He knew that as long as he had opened out a way for divine thought to control his being instead of human thought, that there was no man on earth who could be a power over his identity. He too was saying to the Spanish Inquisition, thou couldst have no power over me. And so, you see, the Hitlers, the Spanish Inquisition, the Pilates, these are just other names for disease, for fear, for death, for cancer, for any kind of problem that you may face. There's only one answer, and it's the same answer. I am divine being. And not declaring it, not borrowing the belief for a moment to fight something, but learning how to live in that consciousness. And then you find that there is no power over divine being. There is no earthly power that can stand before your divine self and in any way intimidate it, fight it, oppose it, influence it, deteriorate it, or take away its life. It cannot be starved. It cannot go hungry. It cannot be poor. It cannot be in pain. In this awareness of your divine life, all that is not divine remains outside your thought and does not enter your consciousness to defile it. It's like taking off a garment. You simply peel off that which is not yourself in your consciousness by knowing that which you are. And then all that is not what you are isn't you. Don't be too concerned if the idea seems too difficult to accept in a moment, because we're going to have 7 steps. And each step will strengthen your Christ consciousness so that ultimately you will accept that I am now a spiritual body. I am now the living spirit of the Father. God is my Father now. I am divine existence, divine life, divine being, divine substance. And the only law under which I work is the law of the Father, divine law. If momentarily mortal law intrudes, it'll just be a little signal to me that I have stepped out of the tree of life. I have stepped out of reality into a false consciousness. And I'll quickly recover, because the moment karmic law starts to work, it's doing me a favor. It's forcing me back to the high consciousness, to myself. And there you will rest until, in the knowledge of divinity, all that says you are not is simply the tempter trying to persuade you that God is not all, that God is not present, that the power of divinity is not flowing through your substance. And you will recognize all of these temptations are nothing more than your human thought. Your human thought becomes the tempter. If you accept that human thought, you walk arm in arm with a false sense of self. Now there will be a day when you will stand before these Pilates and you will look out and you will say to the disease, to the pain, to the lack, to the limitation, to any problem, whether they come in an army or singly. I am divine life, and I will rest on that. That will be your Gethsemane. You may even pause to repair the ear of one of the intruders that has been hurt. So sure will you be that all that is present is the one divine life, that even the intruders are that one divine life. You will know that no matter where the eye can see, and no matter what it sees, only divine life can be there. You will be in the tree of one divine life. You will be accepting the truth in your consciousness. And there will be no more human thought. His thought will then be your thought. There will be no more image making. No more images of sick people, of starving people, of people at war. There will be the one divine life made manifest. For you will be standing in your spiritual form, realized. Now let's prepare for this first revelation of the first step in illumination by realizing that if you are not in a spiritual body now, God is not your father. Make your decision. Choose ye this day. Is God your father, or is God not your father? Are you in a spiritual body now, or are you not? You are writing your own book of life. And if you are not in a spiritual body, then certainly you cannot expect spiritual law to govern that body. Turn ye. Awaken to the fact that you are in a spiritual body. Accept it. Accept it now. And that mind which does not wish to accept it is not the divine mind. It is the clinging, false ego, the self that never was but wants to continue pretending it is. It isn't you. We are all in a spiritual body. And the law of divinity is functioning that spiritual body. We are all perfect now as our Father. This perfection will not manifest the instant you decide, yes, I'm in a spiritual body. But somewhere you must begin. In Christ, in your spiritual form, until there is this turning in consciousness which accepts my spiritual form, you're outside of spiritual law. You're rejecting paradise. You're clinging to the human will, the human conditioned mind. You will continue to believe your thoughts are more important than the thoughts of the Father. And you will suffer for it. This surrender of my thought, my belief, my concept, my sense of things, my will, my ego, my human life, my human body, my human self, for there cannot be all of this and my divine self too. I stand in my divine self now. momentarily out of the hypnosis that there is a second self called a human, a second mind called a human, a second will called a human. I stand in divinity. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. Thou seest the divine self. Even to consider this is the beginning of breaking the world hypnosis which has buried the Christ in our midst. My spiritual body is the only body I have. It can never be sick, it can never age, it can never die. It was never born. It is a continuous expression of the Father. I am always that spiritual body. There is no physical power in this entire universe to prevent my being that spiritual body unto eternity. I am divine existence. Wherever the human mind sees human existence, it is looking only at its own concept, which it has placed higher than the word of the Father. That hypnosis I am learning to break. The Father's word is my authority, not my concepts. Now we're accepting the Father's authority, the Father's will in us, which says, be ye perfect. All that I have is thine. My divine selfhood is thine. My divine life is thine. My divine body is thine. My divine thoughts are thine. All that I am, thou art. And that means you're not what you appear to be. You're what the Father says you are. To learn to accept what the Father says we are is also to reject what we had thought we are. I am changing concept for reality. I am stepping out of the tree of good and evil into the belief that evil is, even out of the belief that there is human goodness. Only the divine exists. It is everywhere. It is now. It is I. This is what the Gospels have taught us, but we have not listened. This is what Joel has taught us, and we have listened. And now the word is coming from John to reveal divinity on earth, where you stand as your being. Every word, deed, thought, or act which denies your divinity is a form of adultery, an adulteration of the word, an infidelity to the Christ of your own being, a denial of yourself, and it is the way of the world. The other way, the acceptance in your consciousness, opens you up to the one infinite consciousness of the Father, the infinite law, the perfection of being. And you find the tree of life is joined You are one in Christ, which is one in the Father, and love flows. Love flows through that tree of life, which is now your being, and the fruits of love appear on the vine. The pains diminish. The lacks and the limitations dissolve. All of the processes of change which had shown a person getting older, weaker, further away from life itself, are reversed. And the very sap of divinity flows through every fiber of your being. Of your own self, you need do nothing. Gone is the struggle and the strife. Gone is the striving and the seeking. The leaf is fed by the life of the tree. Your being is fed by the life of the Father. All that you need is provided in a continuous abundance, because all that I have is thine. We are one tree, not two, not 10, not 500. We are one mind. We are one body. We are one being. We are no longer separate selves wandering off in separate wills in a sense of apartness from the Infinite One. You never saw a sick sunbeam, or a dying sunbeam, or an unhealthy sunbeam, because there's one sun. You will never see a sick child of the divine, because there's one life. You merely have to accept it. Now, when you know that your thoughts create the illusion of an external material world, you will discover that the external material world only has power if you believe your thoughts. If you can say, God didn't put cancer out there, and therefore my thoughts are putting it out there, my neighbor's thoughts are putting it out there, and my neighbor's neighbor's thoughts are putting it out there, but it's not out there, it's in our thoughts. God is out there, and nothing but God is out there. Only divine life is there. Only divine form is there. We're living in the world of a false consciousness in which we think that our thoughts are real. Maybe you couldn't defend against the cancer out there, but try defending against the cancer in your thought and see how easier it is. Meet it at the level of your thought, not out there, and notice the difference. Meet every problem at the level of your thought and not outside of your being. And notice that when you take dominion over your thought, you have taken dominion over the problem. That doesn't mean that you look at something and deny that it's there and try to think positively. It means that in your dominion over your thought, you accept that only God is present. Only divine substance is present. Only divine being is present. And that's your first stoppage of the onslaught of the problem. Now look at your own thought, because it is Pilate, and tell it has no power over you. To your own thought you can say, thou hast no power over me. You're not divine thought, you're human thought. I have found the traitor in my midst. This is not my thought. This is thought superimposed into me, against my will, against my knowledge. This is world thought impersonating my thought. It's saying cancer, disease, problems. I meet it right there at that thought level. And now as you watch your own thought, without fear, without love, without hate, developing the capacity to look at your own concepts without reaction, and to recognize that all you've got there is a concept called pain or lack or limitation, and it cannot be because God is all. Now, Father, that's as far as I can go. All I can do is stop the belief in the concept. I cannot reveal the reality, Father, but you can. I can merely look at that which is not and know it is not. And that which is, Father, I can only accept from you direct. So now I have done my part. I am not untrue to the Father. I am not adulterating. I am standing fast, but now I must wait upon the Lord. Show me, Father. You reveal. You judge this. Your judgment will be righteous. Mine was concept. And this is a great standing still in the face of the problem, with the knowledge that when divine thought enters my being, instead of a problem externalizing, appearing to be there, divine thought will externalize. And that externalization of divine thought will be the thought in me from the Father manifesting in what the world calls out there as the end of the problem. Now, how will I get that divine thought to flow in me? Don't set up the competition of human thought. Take no thought. Watch, behold, look, listen. Meek unto the Father. Create that in a vacuum. Until divine thought comes into this vacuum of no thought, and then the magical transmutation of divine thought becomes the outer manifestation. Now, this should be very clear to you, that there is no problem in your life but one, and that is human thought. In human thought, every concept you have feeds like a parasite. The substance of all of our concepts is human thought. But when divine thought comes in, there are no concepts, because divine thought doesn't have concepts. Divine thought speaks with tongues. Divine thought manifests itself.